Hello, and welcome to this session on money and you. Let me start off by asking you a question. Imagine you could sit down with 100 of the most successful men and women who have ever lived and ask them to reveal to you their secrets for success, prosperity, and high achievement. Do you think that these conversations would help you in any way to be more effective? And would they make you more likely to be successful yourself? Now imagine again that instead of 100 people, you could sit down and interview 1,000 of the most successful men and women alive in America today. If they were to tell you the things that they had done and the qualities that they had developed that had made them successful, do you think that this knowledge would help you to achieve greater health, happiness, and prosperity in your own life? Now imagine that instead of 100 or 1,000, you could look into the lives and minds and the experiences of more than 3,000 successful, famous, wealthy, high-achieving men and women from every walk of life and learn from them what they had done to make their lives so remarkable. Do you think that if you had this information, it could put your life, your career, and your quest for financial independence on the fast track? Your answer to all of these questions is probably, of course. However, once you had this knowledge, there would still be one more thing necessary. You would still have to take action. All the information and ideas and insights in the world would do you no good unless you were to use them to take specific, concrete, continuous action toward the achievement of your goals. Well, the fact is that I'm going to share with you the results of in-depth interviews and studies with thousands of the most successful men and women who've ever lived. I've spent almost 25 years studying and reading every single bit of research that I've been able to find on the secrets of success of high-performing men and women. I've personally read hundreds of biographies and autobiographies, and I've read the research of others based on hundreds and even thousands of the life stories of great and successful men and women. I'm going to compress and condense the most important information available on success and achievement in America, especially the achievement of financial success, and give it to you in a form that you can use immediately, starting now. The focus of this volume of audio tapes is going to be on the qualities, characteristics, behaviors, and action programs of self-made millionaires. We're going to study self-made millionaires because these people who have started from nothing and become extremely wealthy represent the highest development of the success methodologies and techniques available to us in America today. If you study what self-made millionaires have done to go from rags to riches, from poverty to prosperity, and you do the same things that they did over and over again, you will, sooner or later, get the results that they have. It's my firm belief that anyone who really wants it long enough and hard enough can become a millionaire in the course of his or her working lifetime in America today. There were more than 1.7 million self-made millionaires in America in 1992, up from 4,000 in the year 1900. More than 100,000 men and women are becoming millionaires every year in America at a rate of approximately 1 every 12 minutes. These self-made millionaires are coming from every walk of life with every single problem, handicap, disadvantage, and liability that you could possibly imagine. Yet, they're overcoming all of these obstacles and going on to achieve financial prosperity and financial independence at the same time that people to the right of them and to the left of them are staying locked in place, mired in their own rationalizations and excuses. I had an interesting experience a few years ago which brought home to me this whole idea that anyone could become a self-made millionaire. I was giving a seminar to an audience of approximately 1,200 people, and at the break, about 30 of them came up to me and were asking questions on the topic, which was about how anyone could achieve greater success if they really wanted to. Just then, a mentally retarded young man who had been in the audience came up and pushed through the people who were asking me questions and came right up to me. In a loud voice, he asked, "Mr. Tracy, can I be a success too?" As I looked down at him from the stage, thinking for an answer, I noticed that the other people around me were standing back and waiting expectantly to hear what I would tell this young man. He had thick, Coke bottle bottom glasses, big teeth, jeans, torn running shoes, and a t-shirt. I quite honestly didn't know how to answer his question or how I could tell him that he too could be a success if he wanted to. But fortunately, I didn't have to say anything. He continued speaking by saying, "Mr. Tracy, I live in a group home. We repair furniture. Every month, I buy a $100 savings bond. Mr. Tracy, if I continue to do that, will I be a success too?" Well, I just happened to have been reading compound interest tables a couple of days before. I knew instantly that if this young man, even though he... Now let me ask you a question. Is it possible for a reasonably intelligent, hard-working, self-disciplined person such as yourself to save $100 per month over the course of your working lifetime? The answer is, of course you could. Anyone who really wants to can save $100 a month. So what I'm saying is that if you really want to be a self-made millionaire, you can do it by simply disciplining yourself to delay gratification in the short term to ensure financial independence for yourself in the long term. If you're 30 years old today and you begin saving $266 a month, by the time you reach the age of 65, you'll be a millionaire if you average a return of 10% per year in your savings. If you begin saving at the age of 40 and you average 10% per year return, if you put away $759 per month, by the age of 65, you will be a millionaire. Even if you're 50 years old today, at 10% interest, if you save $2,422 a month, you'll retire with more than $1 million at age 65. A person who earns $25,000 per year and who saves $2,000 per year in an IRA or a KEO plan, a tax-deferred savings vehicle, will retire with more than $1 million at the end of his working lifetime, if he or she starts early enough. In effect, anyone can become a millionaire by simply starting early enough and saving persistently enough, and then never, never touching the money. If you do nothing else, it's absolutely essential that you start an account that you invest in and never touch. This will assure that no matter what happens elsewhere in your financial life, that you achieve financial independence and that you will retire wealthy. Whatever your age or circumstances, you can open a savings account and begin. Now let's look at where self-made millionaires come from in America. There have been many studies into the personalities, behaviors, and the life stories of men and women who started with nothing and become wealthy as a result of their own efforts and their own intelligence. These studies came to similar conclusions about the achievement of wealth in America. There are five primary ways to achieve financial independence in America. The number one way, as we've mentioned before, is to start and build your own business. Fully 74% of all self-made millionaires in America achieve their wealth through entrepreneurship and through building successful businesses. However, it's important to note that very few of them achieve financial success with their first business enterprise. On the David Susskind show a few years ago, he interviewed four men who had become millionaires before the age of 35. It was found upon questioning that among the four individuals, they had started or worked at 75 different businesses before they found the ones at which they became wealthy. That's an average of 17 businesses each prior to finding and learning the right combination of ingredients that would assure their financial independence. The second major source of self-made millionaires in America is senior executives, or executives who join a company and stay with the company for a long time. Not only do they eventually earn a very high salary, much of which they save and invest, but they also earn the right to buy stock and to participate in company-sponsored stock ownership plans. Many wealthy men and women in America have worked for the same company most of their lives. It's not necessary to start your own business if you find yourself in the right organization under the right circumstances with the right opportunities available to you. The third major source of self-made millionaires in America are professional people such as doctors, lawyers, architects, engineers, and business consultants of all kinds. These men and women who achieve financial independence have a tendency to work hard, to become very good at what they do, to get paid well above average for their services, and then to save and invest the money, allowing it to grow and compound over the years. These people represent another 10% of self-made millionaires. The fourth major source of self-made millionaires, 5% is professional salespeople. Many professional salespeople work for another company or companies all their lives, and yet they retire wealthy. In every case, these are the salespeople who developed their talents and abilities and rose to the top of their professions. They were paid extremely well, and they held on to the money through careful saving and investment. If you're in sales, you are in one of the very best occupations in America to become financially independent, even to become a self-made millionaire. The fifth category embraces only 1% of men and women who become wealthy. This category includes all those who become wealthy through investments of all kinds, as well as all rock stars, movie actors, authors, singers, inventors, and every other source that you read about in the magazines and newspapers. The affluent in America, by the way, are not particularly showy or ostentatious. They usually live in average neighborhoods, they drive average cars, and they tend to be traditional and family-oriented. The average self-made millionaire in America, when asked to list his most important accomplishments, invariably points to his children and how well they've turned out. Most self-made millionaires are male, although many women are now moving up into the ranks. Many people rationalize their failure to make financial progress by saying things such as, "Well, I'd rather be happy than rich." Well, I have news for you. According to the most exhaustive studies of the rich and super rich in America, they are very, very happy. In fact, they're some of the happiest and the healthiest members of our society. It's true that money doesn't buy happiness, but it doesn't buy poverty either. Worries about money are one of the major reasons for unhappiness, stress, arguments, and psychosomatic illness in our society. People who have lots of money may also have a higher caliber and quality of problems and challenges, but worrying about where the next dollar is coming from is not one of them. One of the most important ideas for success in America is what is called the winning edge concept. The winning edge concept says that men and women who achieve far above the average are not necessarily much better or smarter than the average person. They merely have developed their talents and abilities in the specific areas where it makes a difference. They've developed the critical edges that give them a decided advantage over the average person. A good example of a winning edge is that of a horse that runs in a horse race and wins by a nose, and wins 10 times the prize money of the horse that comes in second by a nose. Is the horse that comes in first 10 times faster? Twice as fast? 10% faster? No. The horse that wins by a nose is only a nose faster, but that translates into 10 times the prize money. A batter in the major leagues who consistently bats 250 gets 3 hits out of 12 times at bat and earns an average of $500,000 per year. The batter who bats 300 gets 4 hits out of every 12 times at bat and earns an average of $2 million per year, a difference of 400% for one additional hit at bat for every 12 times up. The top golfers on the PGA Tour over the professional golfing season are usually not more than one stroke on average below the golfer or golfers who appear at the bottom of the list. It is just small differences in competence and ability that translate into enormous differences in results. One of the most important things you ever do is to identify the winning edges in your field or profession and then concentrate on becoming superior in those critical areas. This can be worth more to you than almost anything that you do in the course of becoming wealthy in your career. In any business or profession, there are seldom more than 5 success factors, 5 areas where you need a winning edge. These factors account for the success of the person or the organization. A failing or a weakness in any one of these factors usually accounts for most of the underachievement or failure of the person or organization. What are the success factors in your field of work? What are the success factors in your profession? What are the success factors in your company? It's by identifying the keys to success in your field and then by developing a plan to become excellent in each of those areas that you can move rapidly forward toward the achievement of your financial goals. In one of the most extensive studies of successful men and women in America, the researchers concluded that there were 5 qualities or attributes that are possessed by high achievers in every field. These five attributes can all be developed, and the lack of any one of them can be fatal to the success that you desire. The number one top-of-the-list quality of successful men and women in America is common sense. Humorist Charlie Jarvis says that the average person has an enormous amount of common sense because he or she hasn't used any of it yet. Be that as it may, common sense seems to be a characteristic of high-performing men and women. The researchers initially defined common sense as the ability to cut through to the heart of the matter. Men and women with common sense have the ability to clearly see the essentials of a situation and not get sidetracked by irrelevant matters. Common sense is usually developed as a result of a long process of experience that enables the individual to recognize a pattern or a situation when it occurs again. This is essential for you in any field where you want to become financially independent. Another definition of common sense is wisdom. The philosopher Aristotle said that wisdom is the result of an equal measure of experience plus reflection. Now, this is very important. Many people have an enormous amount of experience, but they fail to grow because they do not take time to reflect on their experiences. The only way that you can learn and grow from what you're doing is by taking ample time to sit down quietly and think through what you're experiencing and what has happened to you. Think through the lessons that you've learned, what works and what doesn't work. Your ability to reflect upon your experience is what enables you to develop deeper levels of knowledge and understanding in your field. I would add one more ingredient to wisdom, and that would be knowledge. I would say that common sense or wisdom is an equal measure of knowledge plus experience plus reflection on that experience. You can increase the quality and quantity of your wisdom and common sense by increasing either your level of knowledge, your amount of experience, or the amount of time that you spend reflecting on your experience. The very best strategy for you, of course, is to increase all three at once: knowledge, experience, and reflection. The second key quality of successful Americans is expertise. In every single study, the high-performing men and women were recognized as being among the very best in their chosen field. They had spent many months, even years of hard work to become extremely good at what they did. You should be willing to pay any price, go any distance, and invest any amount of time or money to move to the top of your field. The rewards for those at the top are many times the rewards for those in the middle or at the bottom. The third quality of high-performing men and women is self-reliance. In every study, it seems that the highest achievers have a tendency to look to themselves for the answers to their problems. They accept a high level of personal responsibility for their work and for the consequences of their actions. They don't overly rely or depend upon others to bail them out of difficult situations. They move forward and take charge, refusing to make excuses or rationalizations for failure. They grab hold of the situation with both hands, and they rely on their own intelligence and their own ability to achieve success. It's interesting to note that successful entrepreneurs and most self-made millionaires are not speculators. They don't enjoy gambling. They prefer to take calculated risks, risks where they can tilt the scales in their favor by the use of their own talents and abilities. They usually avoid games of chance where the outcomes depend upon luck or upon other people. The fourth quality of successful men and women in America is intelligence. And it's not intelligence so much in the form of IQ, however, that we're talking about. Many self-made millionaires are only of average intelligence. Many of them never finished high school. Some of the richest men and women in America are high school dropouts. Many self-made millionaires never went to college. In one study, 58% of self-made millionaires either didn't go to college or didn't complete college once they began. So intelligence in the form of IQ or academic ability is not the intelligence we're talking about. The definition of intelligence that I prefer is this: intelligence is a way of acting. If you act intelligently, you're smart, irrespective of your IQ. If you act foolishly, you're stupid, no matter how high your grades were in school or how high your measurable IQ may be. Intelligence is a way of acting. People who act intelligently are smart, and people who do not are dumb. Now, if you agree with this definition, and this definition is pretty hard to disagree with, then that leads us to a question. What is an intelligent way of acting? An intelligent way of acting, in my mind, is a way of acting that is consistent with your own self-professed goals. In other words, whenever you engage in an action that is consistent with something that you personally want to accomplish, then you're acting intelligently. Whenever you engage in an action, however, that is inconsistent with your own self-professed goals, then you're acting stupidly, no matter how well you did in school. For example, if one of your goals is to enjoy a long, healthy life and live for 80 or 90 or 100 years, then everything that you do in the form of good health habits that is consistent with a long life is intelligent. Anything you do that harms your health, smoking, overeating, under-exercising, is stupid. It is your own goal that determines whether your actions are smart or not. If once you set your goals, you simply make sure that everything that you do from dawn to dusk is moving you toward the accomplishment of one of your own goals, then you will be acting as intelligently as it is humanly possible to act. And if you make each of your choices, decisions, and actions fit a pattern consistent with your most intensely desired goals, you will be performing at the level of the most intelligent people in America. The fifth quality for success in America is result orientation, the ability to get specific, measurable, and desired results. You and I are paid in direct proportion to the quality and quantity of results that we get in our chosen fields. The more and better results you get, the greater will be your recognition and status, and the greater will be your rewards. Everything that you do for yourself in terms of personal and professional development that increases your ability to get results is a valuable investment in your future. Every extra effort you put in that enables you to increase your output increases the likelihood that you will achieve financial independence or become wealthy. The most successful businesses are those that satisfy the greatest number of people in a cost-effective way. The most successful individuals are those who can get the greatest quantity and quality of results for themselves and for their organizations. There's no limit as to how high you can fly or how far you can go in America if you become a result-oriented, result-achieving individual. In my years of studying self-made millionaires, I have found other qualities and characteristics that they have in addition to what we've just covered. The first of these is that successful people dream big dreams. It's very important that you raise your sights and begin to dream big dreams about yourself and your potential future. All great men and women have had a great vision of what was possible for them. All underachievers either have a small vision or no vision at all. The very act of creating a grand vision for your possible future raises your self-esteem and improves your self-image. You like yourself more and you feel more capable of accomplishing more things when you have the courage to set a high, challenging set of goals and objectives for your work and personal life. Conrad Hilton was told by his mother that if he worked hard, told the truth, and loved the Lord, he would be successful. But as he wrote, he found that this was not enough. He said that in addition, he found that you have to have a dream. As the song goes, you gotta have a dream if you want to make a dream come true. You have to have a dream as well. Only big dreams have the power to move men's minds and hearts. Only big dreams have the power to get you out of bed and get you going first thing in the morning and keep you driving all day long. Only big dreams have within them the motivational capacity to give you the energy and enthusiasm that you need to accomplish them. Here's an action exercise for you. Imagine that whatever you are earning today, you have the capacity to earn 10 times that amount. It doesn't matter how long it's taken you to get to your present income. Expand your vision of what is possible for you by clearly defining a number that represents 10 times your current annual income. Now, let me tell you, the first reaction of most people to this exercise is to think immediately of all the reasons why it's not possible. In an earlier session, I talked about the law of belief. I said that your beliefs determine your reality. That whatever you believe is true or possible for you becomes your reality because you always act in a manner consistent with those beliefs. When you first start thinking of earning 10 times your current income, your natural tendency will be to be doubtful and skeptical. However, if you keep thinking about it, if you keep repeating the amount over and over, you gradually begin to develop a new belief system that will virtually assure that this new, higher level of earnings will eventually become your reality, if you want it badly enough. I explain my 1000% formula for increasing your income by 10 times in Volume 4, and if you don't remember it, you should go back and listen to it. There's no miracle to this. It is a systematic, purposeful process that you can apply to your life as well. For you to become wealthy in the coming years, another key mental attitude that you must develop is to never consider the possibility of failure. Thinking about failure, the fear of failure, is the number one reason why men and women fail in America. The law of concentration says that whatever you dwell upon grows. If you dwell upon possible failure, it will paralyze your ability to take positive, constructive action towards your financial and personal goals. You must put all thought of failure out of your mind. All successful men and women, all self-made millionaires have experienced many temporary setbacks, disappointments, and even outright failure. The average self-made millionaire in America has been broke or nearly broke 3.2 times. But it is the lessons that you learn from pressing forward, in spite of the difficulties you experience, that assure that you will eventually reach your financial goals. The third idea is that you must also resolve to persist until you succeed. Persistence and perseverance are perhaps the most important qualities of success. Your persistence is really your true measure of your belief in yourself. Your ability to persist in the face of adversity and disappointment is the most important single quality that will guarantee that you will ultimately be successful. For years, I've been studying the lives and stories of men and women who have faced great adversity. I found a remarkable thing. There's not a single example of a person who continued to persist in the face of every obstacle and difficulty who did not eventually succeed in the end. There are no examples of failure among those who insisted on persisting no matter what. If you make a decision in advance that no matter what happens, you will keep on keeping on until you reach your goal, then nothing can stop you. And the fourth and perhaps the most important rule of all for success in America is to do what you love to do. Successful men and women and all self-made millionaires have a passion for their work. They love what they're doing so much that they would choose to do it even if it didn't lead to great financial success. Here's an important question that I've asked before. If you won $1 million cash in the lottery tomorrow, what would you freely choose to work at for the rest of your life? In other words, if you had no limitations at all in terms of time or money, what would you enjoy doing so much that you would choose to work at it for the indefinite future? Whatever your answer is to this question, it is an indication of what it is that you might love to do. It's not possible for you ever to be happy until and unless you find your area of excellence, the type of work that you enjoy doing more than anything else. Only then will you be able to throw your whole heart into your work, to develop a passion for it, and to become totally absorbed in your career. This, above all things, will assure that you achieve great success in the course of your working lifetime. Some years ago, I met Mr. Kopp Koppmeyer, who had dedicated more than 50 years of his life to studying success and successful people. He had formulated more than 1,000 success principles, which he'd written into a series of books that had been published in many languages throughout the world. I was very familiar with all of his work, and I couldn't resist asking him a question. The question was, of all the 1,000 success principles that you've discovered over the course of your lifetime, which are the most important? He answered my question almost without a pause. He said that the most important of all success principles are these. First, he said, study successful people and use proven success methods. You simply do not have enough time to learn everything by yourself. You must learn from others who have gone before you. The second principle he told me was, learn from every mistake, every setback, every disappointment, and every failure. Within every setback and obstacle, there is the seed of an equal or greater opportunity or benefit. What you have to do is extract every possible lesson from every experience that you have if you want to grow rapidly toward achieving your goals. His third success principle was, ask your way to success. He said that if you ask other people for help and advice, you'll learn and grow and move toward your goals far faster than if you try to figure it out by yourself. In order to be successful, you need the help of lots of other people, and they will help you if you will simply ask. He then went on to say that the single most important of all success principles, without which none of the others would work, was the principle of self-discipline. He said that successful people are those who can force themselves to pay the price of success over and over in advance until they achieve it. It is only when you force yourself to do what you should do when you don't feel like it that you develop the willpower and self-discipline that builds your character and guarantees your success. The primary reason why people fail is because they are more concerned with pleasing methods rather than with pleasing results. One long-term study of success concluded that successful people are those who make a habit of doing what unsuccessful people don't like to do. Successful people make a habit of disciplining themselves to go beyond where the average person would stop because it's too difficult, too fatiguing, or too challenging. Now, here are some more exercises for you. First of all, calculate and write down on paper the number that represents 10 times your current annual income. Look at this number and begin directing your thinking so that you think in terms of how it can be accomplished rather than reasons why it's too difficult to achieve. Second, ask yourself, what is it that you love to do? What parts of your work do you enjoy more than anything else? If you could work at anything for the rest of your life, what would you voluntarily choose to do? Third, begin to affirm your annual income goal and your desired goal of 10 times your current income in the present tense. Say, I earn X number of dollars, or I achieve a net worth of X number of dollars by such and such a date. Begin to act the part. Walk and talk and think about yourself as if you had already accomplished the goal. Develop an attitude of positive expectancy and continually look for things that you could do or change that could move you closer to your goal. Above all, begin to think of yourself as a self-made millionaire. Begin to identify with and read about other men and women who have achieved great financial success. Read the magazines and the books that tell their life stories and what they had to do to get to where they are. The more you begin thinking of yourself as a self-made millionaire, the more you will activate the law of attraction and begin drawing into your life the people, circumstances, and ideas that will make it. In this session, we're going to talk about the way the world works. Not the way it should or could work, but how it really does. I've spent many years studying psychology, philosophy, and especially economics, searching for insights into why it is that people act the way they do. Why it is that things turn out the way they do, both in our personal lives and in the world around us. When I was a young man and I started traveling, I was often confused by the endless contradictions between what people said, what people wrote, between what I'd been taught in school and what I actually found to be happening in the real world. My quest at that time was for understanding. To that end, I read hundreds of books and traveled in dozens of countries, reading, studying, and asking questions, seeking for a logical and rational framework with which to interpret and understand the world around me. One of the things I saw was that everyone wanted to be more successful. Everyone wanted to get more out of life, to make more money, to be happier, to be healthier, and to have more joy and satisfaction in their relationships. The bookstores were full of books written by men and women who had achieved noteworthy things with their lives. There were audio cassettes and seminars and courses of all kinds to help people get more of the things that they wanted. But for some reason, there clearly seemed to be just as many, if not more, people failing than there ever had been before. Millions of men and women were reading self-improvement books, and yet the vast majority continued to live lives far below their potential, achieving far less of what they really wanted. In an earlier session, I said that the tendency to procrastinate, the inability to delay gratification, and the tendency to take a short-term perspective all contributed to the reasons why people do so poorly. Jim Rohn, the success philosopher, once said, "If you want to be successful, find out what failures do and don't do it. Then find out what successful people do and do more of it." For years, I have studied both success and failure. And in the next few minutes, I'm going to explain to you why people fail so that you can be alert to these tendencies in yourself and in others. I'm going to explain to you the human characteristics that lead to underachievement and frustration so that you can recognize these behaviors and make a conscious effort to avoid them. As you know, failure is just as predictable as success. People fail from within, not without. For every difficulty that stops one person from succeeding, there are thousands of others who have had it a lot worse and who've succeeded anyway. There's nothing in the external world that can explain away failure and underachievement. All of the explanations lie within the attitude, conduct, and behavior of the individual, and nowhere else. For you to achieve the financial independence and even wealth that you desire, it's essential for you to understand the way the world works. And you understand the way the world works by gaining an in-depth understanding of human nature. The entire world and everything that happens in it, aside from natural phenomena, is simply the acting out of human nature on a larger stage. There are basically seven characteristics of what we call human nature. You can recognize these attributes in the infant and in the child, and, unfortunately, in the vast majority of adults. These characteristics by themselves are not a problem. It's only the way that they're manifested and demonstrated in the behavior of the individual that they cause either a benefit or a detriment to that individual and others. Because of the way the human mind is structured, and that means your mind as well, every single human being is inherently lazy, greedy, selfish, ambitious, vain, ignorant, and impatient. This may sound terrible or too sweeping, but let me explain and see if you don't agree. Let's start with a characteristic of laziness. Human beings are lazy, including you and me. Because we value our time, our energy, and our effort, we always seek the easiest way, the most economical way to do anything. In fact, our minds are structured in such a way that we cannot consciously choose a harder way to do something if we can do it in an easier way and get the same result. This fact of laziness as a fundamental part of human nature cannot be seriously argued. We take time management courses in order to save time so that we can do more in different things. We take the shortest route to and from work or wherever else we're going. We are always seeking easier ways to accomplish the same results. This fact of laziness lies behind the development of all labor-saving devices throughout the last 200 years. The entire technological revolution has been aimed at finding easier ways to do things for human beings. We all recognize that time is a scarce commodity, perhaps the most scarce resource available to us today, and because we value time, we are lazy in everything we do. Laziness is neither good nor bad in and of itself. Laziness can be good if it leads us to find faster, more effective, more efficient, and better ways to achieve the same goal. But laziness is bad if it interferes with our achieving the kind of success that we desire in life. The second characteristic of human behavior is that we are all impatient. We all want everything as fast as we possibly can. We place a high value on earlier rather than later. We are always seeking ways to get what we want the fastest way possible. It's said that we are so impatient today that instant gratification is no longer fast enough. We will pay a good deal of money to people who can get things for us sooner rather than later. In fact, we don't really like to wait for anything. Depending upon how badly we want a particular item, for example, when we're hungry and wanting food, we are always impatient and seeking the fastest way to get it. Again, there's nothing wrong with being impatient. A deep-down sense of impatience has led to the development of more time-saving products and services than any other quality of human nature. It's only when our impatience causes us to act in ways that interfere with our success that impatience is a bad quality. Neither laziness nor impatience is either positive or negative. It is only the ways these qualities are demonstrated in human behavior that places a value upon them. The third quality of human nature is that we are all greedy. In a world of scarce resources, we always prefer more to less. If someone offered you a $5 bill or a $10 bill to perform the same task, you'd be crazy to accept the $5 if you could have the $10. The human psyche is structured in such a way that we cannot consciously choose to accept less if we can have more for the same time and effort. And no matter what we get, we always want something more. Human wants are endless and unlimited. As Abraham Maslow, the famous psychologist, demonstrated, once a need of any kind is satisfied, it no longer motivates us. We are only motivated by a need that is not yet satisfied. And no matter how much we earn or how many things we have, we still want more and more and more. We are all, by definition, greedy. The fourth attribute of human nature is that we are all ambitious. Every action you take is an attempt to improve some aspect of your life. We all want our lives to be better in some ways and often in many ways. We seek to improve ourselves personally, professionally, in terms of our health, our relationships, our inner peace, our knowledge, and our experience. The science of human action says that all action is stimulated by a dissatisfaction of some kind. It is only when you feel dissatisfied that you act at all. The opposite of dissatisfaction is contentment or complacency. If a person is completely contented or complacent with his situation, it's hard, if not impossible, to get him to take any action. In sales, this is called the contented prospect, the person who feels that he has no need and therefore no urgency to make a decision or an action of any kind. Three conditions must exist for you or anyone else to take action. This is very important. First of all, you must experience dissatisfaction of some kind. You must feel unhappy or uncomfortable with your existing situation. The second condition is that you must see a state of greater satisfaction. You must see or believe that you can be better off if you achieve a particular goal. The word or term for this is teleology or teleological. It just means that all human action is explained by the ends or the goals sought after by the person taking the action. The third condition is that you must see a way to get from where you are to where you want to be. All human action takes place when you feel dissatisfied in the first place, you see a better state that you desire in the second place, and you see a way to get from where you are to where you want to go in the third place. There are many people who are dissatisfied with their situations and can simultaneously see people in better situations than they are themselves. The problem is that they don't see how to get from where they are to where they want to go. In effect, this entire program is aimed at giving you the tools to get from where you are to where you want to go in a whole variety of areas. Every human action is aimed at an improvement in the condition of the actor. Even people who jump off bridges to commit suicide do it because they believe that they'll be better off as a result of jumping off the bridge than they would be if they continue to live. Now this brings us to a terribly important point. In the mind of any person taking an action, their behavior is rational. In other words, from the point of view of the individual, whatever he or she is doing is a rational act that will lead to an improved state of satisfaction. Unfortunately, many people's rational faculties aren't particularly good, and the actions that they take don't succeed. In many cases, in fact, their actions even cause them to end up worse off than they were before they acted in the first place. But, nonetheless, the action was taken in the mind of the acting person to improve his or her situation. To him or her, it was perfectly rational. The fifth characteristic of human nature is that we are all selfish. What this simply means is that only you can experience happiness or unhappiness for yourself. Only you can experience joy or sorrow, pain or pleasure, hunger or thirst. Every action that you take can only be taken from your own point of view. and from the standpoint of your own thoughts, feelings, interpretations, and reactions. Because no one else can think for another person, every act that we take is essentially selfish. Even the person who gives his or her money to the poor does it because he or she feels from his or her perspective that giving the money to the poor is the best thing that he or she could do with the money. Even people who dedicate their lives to what appears to be selfless service are in fact doing something that gives them a greater pleasure than they would feel doing anything else. Otherwise, they would be psychologically incapable of forcing themselves to do these things indefinitely. Human nature would eventually take over. The sixth quality of human nature is that we are all vain. Each person has an ego. Each person is highly impressed with himself or herself. You and I see the whole world from our own perspective. We are the most important persons in our world. We are the suns around which all the planets of our existence revolve. We are vain with regard to the way we think people see us. An important part of our self-image is our belief about how we're perceived by others. The cosmetic industry, the automotive industry, the home building industry, the home furnishings industry, and many other industries in America are built on satisfying the individual ego needs of the average and above average man and woman. That is, they are built on satisfying their vanity. There's nothing wrong with being vain. The opposite of vanity would be indifference to how we look or appear to other people. The opposite of vanity would be to not care at all whether we or our homes, our cars, our offices, or even our children were attractive and well turned out. It's only when a person's vanity interferes with achieving success and happiness in life that vanity becomes a problem. You all know people whose egos are so out of control that they sabotage all their possibilities for satisfaction and personal fulfillment. The seventh quality of human nature is that we are all ignorant. That's not to say that we are stupid, but simply to say that we do not know everything there is to know about anything. We do not even know everything there is to know about ourselves or our chosen fields or occupations. Because there's so much information in the world and so much information on every single subject, every human action is taken with a certain degree of uncertainty. You don't even know if you're going to get across the street when you step off the curb. One of the greatest drives of human nature is the desire to reduce uncertainty by increasing the quantity and quality of knowledge and experience associated with anything that's important to us. But the fact is that every human action is taken with a large degree of ignorance. No matter how smart you are, because so many things are happening simultaneously beyond your knowledge and control, you can never know everything about anything. Ignorance can be a blessing for you. If your awareness of your ignorance drives you to read and study and grow as a human being, then your ignorance will serve your ends. And your response to your recognized ignorance will make you a far more successful and happy human being. So, what do we have now? We have more than 5 billion human beings in this world, all of whom are lazy, impatient, greedy, selfish, ambitious, vain, and ignorant. Is it any wonder why things go wrong? Is it any wonder that so many apparently irrational actions take place every single day? Is it any wonder that so many people seem to be messing up their lives in so many ways? The basic rule that explains human nature is this. Individuals always tend to seek the fastest and easiest way to get the things they want right now without concern for the secondary consequences of their actions. I call this the expediency factor or the E factor. The expediency factor says that virtually all human action is expedient. It's not based on deep thought, values, principles, or philosophy. Human action is simply an instinctive response to whatever is going on at the moment, and most people's lives are spent hour by hour, minute by minute, taking the fastest and easiest way to get the things they want right now. I'll come back to this E factor in a moment, but first of all, the obvious question arises. What is it that people want? Well, in my estimation, everybody wants roughly the same 7 things in life, though in varying degrees and with varying levels of intensity. The first thing that everyone wants is security. Security is the most pressing subconscious and conscious drive of the human being. Without security, it's impossible for us to think of anything else. We first of all seek physical security. Any threat to our survival, such as an oncoming automobile, causes us to stop thinking about everything else instantaneously and concentrate all of our attention on assuring that we continue to live. If our physical survival is assured, we turn to our financial security, assuring that we have enough money to be able to pay for our food and shelter. When our physical and financial security is assured, we then become concerned about our emotional security, our assurance that we are okay in the minds and hearts of other people. The need for security or survival, physical, emotional, and financial, is the most powerful drive or instinct in all of human nature. The second thing that we all want is comfort. Once we have assured our survival, the very next thing we want is comfort in our clothes, in our home or where we live, in our transportation, and even where we sit on the job. Comfort is extremely important to us, and we will pay a lot in terms of time, effort, and money to achieve and increase our levels of comfort in different areas of our lives. Once we have a certain amount of security and comfort, then we want leisure. We want to take it easy, to relax, to kick off our shoes and put up our feet. Leisure is what is called an economic good. An economic good is something that we will pay for, something that we will trade time and money for. The leisure industry in America today is worth many billions of dollars. The Disney theme parks, SeaWorld, the various sports stadiums for baseball, football, and basketball, plus the incredible variety of holiday packages and vacation resorts and activities are all testimony to the tremendous value that we place on leisure. The fourth thing that we all want is love. Human beings are love-tropic organisms in that we are always attracted toward and most influenced by the major source or sources of love in our lives. Just as the flower or the plant reaches upward toward the sun, we reach out toward other people for the love that we need to reinforce ourselves and our own humanity. We know that human beings need love like roses need rain. All human behavioral problems stem back to love withheld. We're conditioned from infancy to reach out for love from other people. And as soon as we have a certain level of security, comfort, and leisure, we immediately look around us to find someone that we can love and who will love us in return. Love is as much a requirement for emotional health as food and water are requirements for physical health. The fifth thing that we all want is respect. We have a deep, down, and profound need to be accepted and respected by other people. All of the rules of manners and etiquette are aimed at teaching us the behaviors that are most likely for us to earn and keep the respect of those we respect, and even those we don't. One of the primary civilizing forces in mankind is the fact that human beings will often undergo great sacrifice and great deprivation to avoid losing the respect of their peers, colleagues, and friends. One of the greatest rewards of success in America, according to the Gallup Organization poll, is the knowledge that one has earned the respect of one's co-workers and parents and spouse. In fact, the withdrawal or threatened withdrawal of respect has a powerful psychological effect on most human beings. To be publicly disgraced as a result of having done something that loses us the respect of others is one of the worst things that can happen to us in our society. We will pay a high price to gain and maintain the respect of others. Once we have enough comfort, security, leisure, love, and respect, the sixth thing we begin to seek is fulfillment. We're all driven from within to seek transcendence, to seek meaning in life by committing our lives to something bigger than ourselves. Of course, people who are hungry or insecure or uncomfortable or unloved or out of favor with other people have very little mental or emotional energy left to spend on seeking fulfillment. But as soon as we satisfy our basic needs in those other areas, we immediately, instinctively turn toward channeling our lives in the direction of higher meaning and purpose. The seventh need that all human beings have, to a greater or lesser degree, is for power. Power is simply the ability to influence others to act in a way that is consistent with our own goals and our own desires. The opposite of power is powerlessness, a major source of anxiety, stress, feelings of inferiority, and low self-esteem. The desire to have some kind of power or influence over the people in our lives is normal and healthy. It is only how that power is acquired and used that makes the seeking of power either positive or negative. If we seek power in order to help ourselves and others achieve worthwhile goals, then the power is positive and healthy. But if we seek power for personal aggrandizement, to be able to coerce or punish others if they get in the way, then the power can become a negative force that destroys not only the holder of the power, but those against whom it's used as well. Of course, there's a reason why people seek power. It's because of the E factor. Having and using power is often the fastest and easiest way for a person to get the security, comfort, leisure, love, respect, and fulfillment that he or she wants. Many people seek both power and money. Again, this is easily explained by the E factor. If you have power and money, you have control. You are able to get the things that you want faster and easier than a person who has neither power nor money. Now you're beginning to see how the world works and why it is that things happen the way they do. The world is full of people who are lazy, impatient, greedy, selfish, ambitious, vain, and ignorant. And all of them are seeking the fastest and easiest way to get the security, comfort, leisure, love, respect, fulfillment, and power that they all desire. Since human wants are unlimited and endless, no matter how much any of these a person gets, if he or she can see a way to get more, he or she will take the fastest and easiest way to get it. No matter how much security a person has financially, he or she wants even more, and more, and more. No matter how much comfort a person has in the form of a fine house or a fine car, he or she will want an even bigger house, an even more expensive boat, a plane, a summer home, a winter home, and so on. No matter how much leisure a person gets, he or she will want to take ever longer vacations to ever more exotic and exciting places. No matter how much love, respect, and fulfillment a person achieves, he or she wants more and more and more. Most of life's unhappiness comes from frustrated expectations. It comes from not accepting reality as it is, but rather wanting reality to be different in some way. The only major question that has to be settled in any society is, how is it that people, with the human nature they have, achieve the satisfaction of the needs that they have? How is it that lazy, impatient, greedy, selfish, ambitious, vain, and ignorant people get the security, comfort, leisure, love, respect, fulfillment, and power that they want? In a free market or free society, the only way that you can get the things you want is by serving other people. The reason why the free enterprise American economy is so strong is because it taps into the best energies, physical and mental and spiritual, of its people by only allowing people to get what they want by serving others with the goods and services they want and are willing to pay for. Since everyone wants to be better off, there's a tremendous competition in America to satisfy other people as consumers or customers. This vigorous competition continually causes prices to go down and quality to go up, leading to Americans having the highest living standards of any nation in the history of the world. And this brings us to another critical point. Whatever you repeat over and over again becomes a habit. The habit eventually becomes locked in, and then it's almost impossible for you to act in a manner inconsistent with it. If a person follows unproductive and unhelpful ways to get the security, comfort, leisure, love, respect, fulfillment, and power that he desires, eventually he will be unable to perform in productive ways. Almost everything that you or I do is the result of habit. If we form good habits, these habits will lead us on to success, achievement, and happiness. However, if we form bad habits, those habits will lead us on to underachievement, frustration, and failure. Now, it's also true that human beings are generous, loving, compassionate, hardworking, honest, decent, sincere, and all the other wonderful qualities that we see manifested in the human experience. And this brings us to the only counterforce to the E factor, and that is self-discipline, or self-restraint, self-control. Every single morning when the alarm clock goes off, the battle between the E factor and self-discipline begins. Self-discipline is the only effective counterforce to the almost irresistible pull of the E factor. Since most people do not have the strength of character to resist the E factor, they give in over and over again until giving in becomes a habit. For example, almost everyone knows that it's important to get up in the morning at least 2 hours before you have to be at work so that you can plan, organize, and arrange your day. It's also a good idea to exercise, to read something uplifting, and to prepare yourself mentally and physically for the day ahead. However, the great majority of men and women either set the alarm clock so that they only have the barest amount of time to get to work, or they ignore the alarm clock when it goes off. The E factor wins the first battle of the day. Everybody knows that they should be saving part of their paycheck for the future, yet 70% of Americans have no discretionary income at all. They spend everything they make and a little bit more besides. When they get their paycheck and look around them at all the things they can buy with it, the E factor wins again. Now here's the catch. There are always two reasons for doing anything. I call this the law of duality. The first reason is the reason that sounds good. The second reason is the real reason. No matter what a person does, because he wants the respect of others, he always offers what sounds like a good reason, a reason that is socially acceptable, if not admirable, for doing it. The real reason, however, is that what he has chosen to do is, in fact, the easiest way for him to get whatever it is he wants at the moment. In almost every case, when actions are motivated by the E factor, when people take the fastest and easiest way to get the things they want with no concern for secondary consequences, the ultimate result is negative, if not disastrous. If a person who wants money, driven by the E factor, acquires it illegally, he gets short-term gain at the price of long-term pain. He gets arrested, put in jail, and loses almost all chance of having a good life in the future. If a young person drops out of high school so he can buy a car and have a good time, the short-term gain is offset by the long-term pain of a lifetime of low wages and poor jobs. If, in the education system, you remove the requirement of examinations and academic standards, teachers will take the easiest and fastest way to get what they want. They will teach less and less and demand more and more money for doing it. The ultimate result will be a nation of illiterates. The E factor wins again. All of economics, and especially the free market system, can be explained by the E factor. Consumers, especially you and me, want the very most for the very least. Producers, which is just another word for you and me when we're working, want the very most for the very least as well. Every new product or service is aimed at satisfying the E factor in human nature. Every new product or service is a way to appeal to the laziness, impatience, greed, selfishness, ambition, vanity, or ignorance of the customer in the marketplace. And there's nothing wrong with this. It's just a fact of life, like the rain. All successful entrepreneurship is based on finding faster and easier ways to give people the security, comfort, leisure, love, respect, fulfillment, and power that they desire. The most successful business people in America are those who are the most alert to opportunities to serve men and women with the things they want, either at lower prices or better quality or by something completely new and different. Your job and my job is to take our place in the economic system and find a way to use our talents to help other people get the things they want in the fastest and easiest way. The more skilled and capable we become at serving other people with the things they want, the more successful we will be and the more we will be paid. We will, in effect, get our security, comfort, leisure, love, respect, fulfillment, and power from producing useful and valuable goods and services for our fellow men and women to enjoy. You can continue the process of building yourself into an outstanding human being by being consciously aware that at every moment the E factor lurks like a trap to ensnare you. Every time you resist the temptations of the E factor, you become stronger, more self-disciplined, and of better character. Every time you consciously resist the temptation to take the fastest and easiest way and instead push yourself to do what you know is right, Even though it's hard and sometimes unpleasant, you are building yourself into a superior man or woman. This is the great challenge, and this is the psychology, the mindset of success. Now here's an action exercise for you. Once again, take a sheet of paper and draw a line down the middle from top to bottom, dividing the page into two parts. At the top of the left-hand column, write E factor, and at the top of the right-hand column, write self-discipline. Then make a list on the left-hand side of every area where the E factor has a negative effect or influence on your behavior. Be honest. List things like diet, work, relationships, and other activities. When you've completed the left-hand column, make a list in the right-hand column of every area or example that you can think of where you have exerted discipline on yourself to resist the E factor. Think back from your early childhood through your teenage years and through your adult life up until now. Write down every example where you have either given in or held out with regard to the E factor. You'll notice that the best times, the best moments of your life have been those times that you listed in the right-hand column. You will find that the unhappiest and most negative times of your life were those times or events listed in the left-hand column. Now, take a second sheet and make a list, a goal sheet with regard to self-discipline. Write out every single area of endeavor from the time you get up in the morning until the time you go to bed at night where you're going to begin to apply self-discipline. Go over the list and put plus signs from 1 to 4, 1 being less important and 4 being extremely important, next to the areas where you feel that greater self-discipline will have a real payoff in your life. Then, use self-discipline to build self-discipline in yourself. Force yourself to follow through on the resolution that you are making on this piece of paper. Within 30 days, you'll begin to notice an extraordinary difference in yourself and your results.